Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's Green Thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants, indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. See homedepot.com/delivery for details.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
Hello, everyone, and welcome into the Roto World Basketball Show. I am Vaughn Delzell, joined alongside Dan Titus of Yahoo Sports and Raphael Johnson of NBC Sports. And today, we are going to be fighting a little bit. We got some beef on the menu because, Dan, what is up, man? I cannot believe what happened at the end of the game, too. But, holding the Knicks in my pocket, Raphael, I'm pretty happy. How are we feeling today, gentlemen? Dan, are you okay? You doing all right?
I'm doing just fine, man. It's frustrating. You know, this is playoff basketball. I'm expecting whistles to be swallowed on home courts. And, sometimes the calls don't go your way and you're not going to get everything you asked for. But, like, to be honest, I feel like there was a couple of opportunities where the Sixers could have grabbed an offensive rebound, could have made a couple of buckets, easy shots at the rim. Where's Tobias Harris? Where's Kelly Oubre? Where's Buddy Hield? So, like, there's other things at stake here where, no, to be honest with you, I feel like the Sixers had two games that they could have won, same way Joel Embiid said it. But, you know, if they don't take care of it on their home court, this series is a wrap. So I think from what we've seen thus far, like, the role players of the Knicks have just been outstanding. Shouts to Dante DiVincenzo, Josh Hart, two players that were definitely valuable for fantasy managers down the stretch too. And they're just coming to play. And Isaiah Hartenstein as well.
Yeah, I do think the Sixers win game three. I hope they win game three for the sake of the series. I think this could be the most entertaining series. And especially when you talk about home court advantage, the Sixers and the Knicks are two of the best teams when it comes to that, especially with their crowds, Raphael. So I've enjoyed what we've seen in New York City. Of course, MSG had one of the best endings of any basketball game so far in the first round. Will we get that same type of energy in Philadelphia? What do you expect from the Knicks? Can the Sixers steal game three, or do you like the Knicks' chance?
All right, we're going to get as much energy from the Philly fans as the New York fans. Like, these are two extremely passionate fan bases that they can turn on you really quick when the effort isn't there. So I think if you're the Knicks, you want to get out to an early lead. Like, they struggled in the first two games getting off the slow starts. I think if they can do that, maybe they've got a chance to steal game three. I think I'm with Dan. I think Philadelphia is going to win game three. At least they should. I give Kelly Oubre the benefit of the doubt because he's the first guy guarding Jalen Brunson, and that's a difficult task. So I give him that. But like you said, Tobias, where are you, bro? If he wants to play like this, I'm cool with it. But if you're a Sixers fan, you need to see a lot more from him than just 10 points that he had in game two.
Yeah, Kelly Oubre certainly kind of disappeared offensively in the last game, but I kind of wanted to focus on a player that I feel like the Knicks were going to take full advantage of, and that's been Kyle Lowry so far. I feel like the guard position for Philadelphia, Dan, has been the reason why New York has been able to do as well, because we just spoke on Josh Hart and DiVincenzo. Sixers really don't have anybody like that outside of Maxey. What can they do to make this a 7-game series down the road? Who do you think needs to be the focus here outside of Embiid and Maxey?
I feel like it needs to be Tobias Harris, but I just don't know that you can rely on him at this point. Like, his team has already leaked that he's got interest in rejoining the Detroit Pistons in the offseason. And the fact that your team is leaking that information at this point in time, like, come on. All right, so I can already get you out the way. I'd rather you just go deep into your bench, give campaign some minutes. DeAnthony Melton is reportedly practicing and should be a go for game three. I think that's all going to add another dimension to the Sixers and their ability to stop Brunson. they've been doing a good job. Like they're holding them onto like what 35% shooting, something like that. Maybe even worse than that.
Yeah.
But you know, you just got to have someone like D'Anthony Melton can switch off and guard DiVincenzo. And to be honest with you, like I feel like they're doing the right things. They just have to make shots. So if someone's going to have to step up, maybe you give Buddy Hield those Tobias Harris minutes. Ricky Council might not be ready yet, but at this point, what do you have to lose? Like you just need someone that's going to give you effort, defense, and get some and reduce those second chance points, because that's really what's been killing the Sixers is these second chance opportunities and just not hustling for the ball, honestly.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one guy that's been a big hustle player on the Knicks side, Raphael, I want to hit on, which I know you didn't say anything about. I'm shocked. Mitchell Robinson, baby. How about the one-on-one defense? The Knicks are leaving him, Hartenstein, these guys to guard Embiid. Obviously, he's still getting his to some degree. But I want you to talk about those two's impact on Embiid down low. And when do we see the Jalen Brunson game? When does he pop off for 30, 35 points and take over?
I think it'll happen eventually, but – you know, Robinson and Hartenstein have both done a good job. I think the first game, Mitchell saw more of the minutes because he played a little bit better than game two. It was more about Hartenstein. Had that crucial game-saving block on Maxey after the three-pointer. So combined, they're a really good center. And I think when you're dealing with Joel Embiid, you're not going to stop him. You know, I think if you can have those guys hold their own to the point where you don't have to cheat off and double too much, you're in a decent place. Now, he said that he's 70 to 80%. I don't even think he's that healthy. There's the mental hurdle that I think when we saw that alley-oop in game one, I don't know if he's cleared that completely yet. And the second half on Tuesday, no rebounds in the second half. He pretty much loitered on the perimeter the whole half. He still got 15 points, but they need Embiid to be a bit more involved. I just don't know if he has that in him physically right now. Give him credit for manning up and trying to battle through this, because I don't think he's anywhere near as healthy as he said he was.
Playing on one leg, eyes are messed up. Like he's still dealing with that orbital fracture thing. His eyes are blinking all weird. Dude, he is if I'm a Sixer, so I want to get your guys' take on this. If you were to explore, let's just say that the Sixers lose this series, the first round exit, at what point do you start asking the question of, is Joel Embiid a tradable asset? Because you're just going to continue to run into the same thing year after year. You're going to be struggling get to the regular season. You get to the postseason. These things happen. These injuries happen. They may be random, but like this knee thing is becoming a recurring theme here. So I don't know, man. I feel like he had an MVP campaign last year. You could have gotten a King's ransom. And you're already going into the summer with a whole bunch of cap space. The only person you're going to re-sign really is Tyrese Maxey or have on contract. It's Tyrese Maxey and Joel Embiid. It's like the perfect time to set the reset button. But I don't know that Philly fans will ever do it because he's an MVP-like dude. But yeah, if you can't count on him in the playoffs, like what are we doing here?
I think the first step is you're telling him to politely decline that invitation to the Olympics. I think that's the first thing. Like,
yes.
Obviously, it's a dream. Yes. A lot of these guys that compete in the Olympics, but no, man. We'll see what the medical examination, like that postseason examination is whenever their season's done. But I think, if anything, you're re-signing Maxey and you're seeing what you can do in terms of rearranging, you know, the other pieces around those two. Because he's an MVP guy. I don't think you give up on him that easily. Maybe you have to kind of manage some things throughout the season in terms of his minutes. Like, look, you're not going to play 35 minutes in November and December. That's just not going to happen. Maybe try to progressively ramp him up throughout the season, because they have enough talent, I think, with those two leading the way that they don't have to be too worried about seeding outside of making sure you don't wind up in the play-in again.
He doesn't have too many years left, though. At 30 years old, like, the clock is absolutely ticking for Joel Embiid. But I think I agree with Raphael. It's a situation where you probably want to keep Tyrese Maxey and Joel Embiid together for the next 2-3 seasons. And, Dan, you cannot not trust the process, man. You got to keep believing in it.
I trusted it long enough, man. A whole lot of first-round pick injuries and not coming to fruition. Like, what they've gotten Joel Embiid has been great. Like, game-changing, franchise-altering selection there. But if dude can't stay healthy, man, like, Like, do we want Patrick Ewing? Is that what we want?
Patrick Ewing made two finals appearances. We're not slandering Patrick Ewing on this broadcast.
Oh, yeah, Joel Embiid, the Sixers still got knees. A long way to go, man. Before we move on to another man that should probably decline his invitation to the Olympics, final prediction for the series, Knicks Sixers. Who wins how many games? Now it's already 2-0 Knicks.
I put my prediction as Sixers in six. That's looking pretty sketch right now. I'm going to stick to my squad, and I hope they get it together. They tie it up 2-2, Sixers and seven.
I'm going to stick with my original prediction, Knicks and seven. I think this is a series that is close to the first two games where I think it's going to be that way throughout. Home court advantage will ultimately get it done for New York, though.
Yeah, and the home court advantage in the NBA so far has been phenomenal in the first round. So I definitely expect that to continue. And as you guys, we all stated, those two to the two best home crowds in the NBA, arguably, not just the Eastern Conference. So hopefully it does go seven. That's where my money is as well. But speaking of the guy that should decline his invitation to the Olympics, that's Kawhi Leonard in addition to Joel Embiid. He did make his return, though, in game two and a loss to the Mavericks. Now, that is a 1-1 series, but Kawhi had 15 points, Dan, 7 rebounds and 2 assists in 35 minutes, probably a little more than we thought he'd play, but it was a close game. So what was your thoughts on that process, him coming back and losing after they destroyed the Mavericks in game one?
Yeah, I think it was just a matter of him coming back and just getting adjusted. He hasn't played in over 20 games, so there's going to be some kind of, you know, delay in how involved he is in the offense, how well he looked. I thought he looked all right. And for this being the second game of the series, I would actually be more encouraged with the fact that he came back in game two. Because I was expecting him to have like one of these Giannis type absences where you don't really know what that timetable looked like. So getting him back sooner rather than later is always a good thing. I think it's just more about what can they do to stop Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic. And I don't know that they have an answer for that yet. And the other thing is like when Kawhi is off the floor, it's like James Harden had a really good game one. Can he be dependable for the rest of this series? And if he's not, I think that's going to be the downfall for the Clippers, because they're going to need all three of their stars to be legit. Kind of the same way we're looking at Phoenix, right? Like Bradley Beal, give us something, bro, because it's not it. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. But, you know, I think ultimately the Mavericks are going to be too much for the Clippers.
Yeah, I certainly thought that this was going to be another series to go 6 or 7 games here. And, you know, the Clippers have some entertaining pieces, the Westbrooks, the Hardens, the Mans. But obviously you need Kawhi Leonard to drop as many points as possible to beat Mavericks team with Luka Doncic and Kyrie that combined for 55, Rafael. But let me ask you this. Kawhi got 4 steals, which is very impactful here. What does he need to do in game 3, or what do the Clippers need to do in general to win that road game? Now the Mavs might be taking control of the series.
I think they just need to be consistent in terms of their approach offensively. Paul George took 6 fewer shots in game 2 than he did in game 1. You expect a decrease, but I thought that was a bit sharp. Maybe they're a little too deferential to Kawhi in terms of, you know, making sure he got his touches. He was 0-for-5 from 3, so I kind of wonder how much his legs are there right now. Maybe a couple of days of practice getting some contact work in will help him there. And speaking of health, Dallas had a couple key injuries last night too. You know, Daniel Gafford hurt his back, played 9 minutes, really wasn't effective when he came back out for that second stint in the third quarter. Tim Hardaway Jr. sprained his ankle in the second quarter, did not return. So we talk about supporting cast in terms of that Knicks-Sixers series. I think they're going to be important in this series as well. So to not have two important players healthy, Gafford being a starter, it's going to put a lot on Derek Lively the second, Maxi Kleber. Josh Green saw an uptick in minutes in the second half last night too. So I don't think anyone is in position to grab control of this series right now. Now, game 3 is going to be important, but I still think this is a series that's probably going to go a distance.
Yeah, it's going to be very important to see the health of those two players because Josh Green and Dante Exum will be your two backup guards there. And, you know, as I mentioned, the Clippers' backup guards, Westbrook, they got Powell as well. So it's important to have those two guys healthy for Dallas. But we'll see what happens with that series in general. I hope we see a 6-7 game series and Dallas coming out on top. But Clippers will not go away. That is for sure. There was another injury, though, Dan. You were speaking on the Suns there for a second, and Grayson Allen going down for Phoenix is a big deficit for them because them going back home is in a full max-out desperation spot at 0-2. How much trouble is this team in? Because they are not getting much at all from their bench. At least they looked better in game two, though.
I mean, they're getting cooked, like, on both sides of the ball, man. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just not – Durant, and this is the thing about Durant. He'll always get his, no matter what. But it's a matter of the complementary pieces, will they? And Devin Booker hasn't looked great. You know, he had to foul – he fouled out, you know, last game, and seemed like he was getting the emotions was getting to him a little bit. But I think at this point, you know, with Grayson Allen going down, that's a key defender, key three-point threat that they're going to lose. And at this stage, going down 0-2 on a team that's, like, just thriving, playing freely, I mean, I don't know. It's just scary. I don't think the Minnesota Timberwolves can be messed with right now. And they look like the biggest threat to the Denver Nuggets right now.
I do like the Suns in game three, but I agree. Everything you saw Phoenix work on very well to beat Minnesota in the regular season, the Timberwolves have kind of turned around and be able to defend that for Phoenix. And Phoenix has been able to match up size-wise with Minnesota. We saw the rebounding edge in game one, 52-28 to Raphael. Suns record and worst advantage or rebounding disadvantage ever. But they did look better in a lot of ways until that mid-third quarter. Once again, the Timberwolves pulled away. What are you expecting in this series, and how do they overcome Grayson Allen, who is a big offensive piece for them?
Well, you need Eric Gordon to continue to play well. Thought he played well last night, 15 points, but – like Dan said, the size discrepancy, I think that's the biggest issue for them because Minnesota, you know, Rudy Gobert has been really good the first two games. Like, for one, he shot 6-7 from the foul line in both games. Like, you're not expecting that. Then what he does as a rebounder and defender, Anthony Edwards off and on, as good as he was in game one, kind of quiet in game two. But then you have Jaden McDaniels score 25. You have Mike Conley score 18. And we still haven't seen the best out of Karl Anthony Towns either. So you add in the bench, like Naz Reid, Nikhil Alexander-Walker. I think this is where spending all that money on your top-end guys gets you in trouble because they weren't able to upgrade the bench. They weren't able to get anything of value at the point guard position. And those are areas that have stuck out as serious areas of need because Minnesota can pressure them defensively. And Beal and Booker haven't handled it that well in terms of making plays off the bounce. So I don't think it'll be a sweep, but I think Minnesota's got this series well in hand, even though all they did was hold serve at home.
Yeah, which is what most teams have been doing here. But it does seem tough for me to envision Phoenix winning both games at home from what we've seen again from Minnesota so far. They have looked like the completely better team mismatch. As you spoke on, Jaden McDaniels balled out in game two, 25 points, 8 rebounds, and 3 assists. So I love what I've been able to see from this team in general. Let me ask you this. Is McDaniels the most impressive guy in the West that no one saw coming and Josh Hart in the East so far? Raphael, is that fair to say with the two, how they've been playing?
I think Hart was kind of expected. You know, you think about how well he played after the trade deadline. Triple-doubles from like – well, I mean, if you stand there and watch a professional athlete just shoot the ball, they're going to hit a few, you know? Yeah. So I think McDaniels would be the more surprising of the two in terms of what he did in game two because offensively he doesn't just take one backseat to the other guys they have. He probably takes multiple backseats, you know, to the offensive talent they have. So for him to come out and get 25 – I'm willing to bet that was not in the Suns scouting report ahead of game two.
Yeah, certainly something they hope doesn't happen in game three either. But he looked great on both ends of the floor defensively. He's making big, big impacts. Dan, I was pretty surprised to see Pascal Siakam, Spicy P, getting so busy for Indiana against Milwaukee. I was also surprised to see my guy Tyrese Haliburton only pushing out 21 points in two games for the Pacers. Don't love that, but how does Milwaukee stop him, and what do you expect Milwaukee to look like when Giannis comes back? Because Damian Lillard has looked great in the two games offensively, even without Giannis.
Yeah, I feel like the Bucks are in a good spot, considering that Giannis should be returning probably game three or game four. I think that the Bucks really just have to figure out a way to stop Pascal Siakam. I don't know that – I figured Bobby Portis would probably put up more of an effort there. Brook Lopez, obviously more of a low-post guy, but like – Pascal Siakam is working all three levels right now. And I think he's the first player since like Shaq or Tim Duncan to have 35 and 10 on his first two games. First two games in the East with his new team or something like that in the playoffs or something like that. But either way, man, this guy is unstoppable right now. And I love the way that, you know, Rick Carlisle has figured out that, you know, hey, let's play through Pascal Siakam. And you saw it kind of change as the trade deadline happened, that they're trying to get him more acclimated. Their defense got better. But I think that to your point about Tyrese Halliburton not scoring that much, they're getting great minutes from Andrew Nembhard. They're getting great minutes from TJ McConnell. This team is just playing very well-rounded basketball. And, you know, I think that this is going to be another deep series where I think I have the Bucks winning in seven. When you insert Giannis back in here, that's just going to be a natural deterrent for Siakam to be able to get to the rim as easy as he's been. And obviously those turnaround shots won't be as easy. But I don't know. I think that the way that the Pacers are playing five out, man, like Miles Turner hitting these shots, they just look like a really good basketball team. So this is going to be a dogfight for the Bucks. And if I think we need to be asking the question, if the Bucks don't get out of this, what does that mean for Doc Rivers? Because another first-round exit after all of the other not being able to get past the second round, that's going to look really bad. And I think it's similar to, you know, the way we talked about the Suns. When you go out and get an investment like Damian Lillard, you're hemorrhaging the rest of your roster, right? And I think that what we're seeing with the Pacers is that they have depth to be able to continue to throw guys out there. Whereas the Bucks, you're looking into like Pat Connaughton to step up here. So like, I feel like right now it's just a battle of, who can slow down their best player. And I think right now the Pacers have the slight edge here because Pascal Siakam's just balling out with Giannis off the floor.
Yeah, and when Giannis comes back, this could be a completely different series by then. But within the end, with home court, you'd like to see Giannis probably back as soon as possible if you're a Bucks fan. And Rafael, I'll say this. I think I agree with Dan in the sense that Indiana is definitely a deeper team. They're well-balanced, well-rounded. But this is the draw that Milwaukee and Doc Rivers wanted. They wanted to face an Indiana team that was young. They played fast, didn't play much defense, just like Milwaukee, right?
Yeah, you guys laughed when I said last week about the basketball guys possibly, you know, settling some scores with these teams that kind of duck competition. But didn't happen. It hasn't happened with Cleveland, but Milwaukee, they've got a battle on their hands. I think getting Giannis back is going to be key because, like Dan said, he's probably the best deterrent to Pascal Siakam in terms of the mid-range game and getting to the basket. Because without him, they don't have anyone. And offensively, they need another marquee scorer. So I don't think Chris Middleton's got it in him physically to be that marquee scorer that he's been in the past right now. You saw him hit the bench a little bit in the first half last night with a right leg issue. Came back into the game, but they need explosiveness. Like as good as Damian Lillard overall numbers look, he scored a total of 8 points in the second half of the first two games. So obviously something's happening there to where he goes all out in the first half. In the second half, whatever Indiana's managed to do, or if it's something that Milwaukee and Lillard have not done, the production has dropped significantly. And that was an issue in game two because they were battling from a hole and Indiana just extended its lead. So getting Giannis back, whenever that happens, that's going to be the key in this series, because if he doesn't, then you start to wonder if Indiana has more than a puncher's chance to win this series.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think this is – I mean, we keep hitting on it, and I'll say at the end of the show, I wanted something that I did today that was kind of crazy, but I think this is another series. We all keep mentioning this could go deep here where these teams go back and forth all series long, and it's kind of just wait and see with Giannis' approach, but – I don't expect Giannis to be out here hitting threes or anything when he comes back, but he's definitely liable to score 25, 30 points when he does come back, and that changes a lot for the Milwaukee Bucks offense. Speaking of a lot changing, the NFL draft's coming up, and you know what, guys? I think the Steelers, they might just trade all their assets, go get Caleb Williams. What do you think, Dan? Will be the best? No, probably not, but the NFL draft does kick off on Thursday, and we have you covered with mock drafts, positional rankings, player interviews, and news updates all around the league. You can go to NBCSports.com/NFL draft today for insight leading into round one, and check back throughout the draft for analysis on every pick. We have a lot of people covering that for NBC, so go check it out. It'll be exciting. Hopefully your team gets the player that you want.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
But I'm going to be watching a lot of NBA the next couple of nights because I feel very locked in, gentlemen. I know that you guys are as well. And two games tonight on the Wednesday slate is Heat Celtics, Pelicans Thunder. It's not going to be crazy to say both the favorites win at home. They're big favorites, right, Dan? But what can the underdogs do to keep this game closer and entertaining? You'd probably assume the Pelicans have a better chance to upset since they kept it close in game one.
Yeah, the Pelicans, I feel like, are pretty intriguing because, you know, if we're looking at just the playoff series, obviously Zion's out, but I think the emergence of Trey Murphy, pretty much not a household name yet. I'm kind of we talked about an article who were our breakout stars of this playoff campaign. I wish I had the balls to put Trey Murphy there, but the way that he's playing, I think they need to continue to feed him. He's dynamic, you know, obviously the size and what he can do from the perimeter. And Herb Jones also, like, I think they've both done a really good job. You can only do so much to guard SGA, but I think it's about taking away those other players. Chet Holmgren had a great game. So I don't know if you can maybe bang with him a little bit more with Valanciunas, continue to attack in the paint. I think that that's the vulnerability for the Oklahoma City Thunder. And I think there's, I don't know, it feels like Willie Green goes to Larry Nance a little bit too early, in my opinion. Like, I feel like they need to stick with Valanciunas a little bit longer. But I do feel encouraged by the way the Pelicans looked in that first game, that they could probably maybe steal this next game in game two, or potentially get back in the series, in game three or game four.
I do think that these two series, and I've already wrote about this for NBC, end in sweeps. I think the Celtics and the Thunders handle business here. I do not think the Pelicans without Zion have enough firepower, Raphael. I want to ask you if you do, because, Ingram and McCollum, over 60 field goal attempts, shooting about 35% the playoffs so far, play in game one.
Yeah, I don't see this series ending in the sweep at all. I think New Orleans is going to be able to get something done. You know, a big part of it, like you mentioned, Ingram and McCollum need to be more accurate. Also, Herb Jones is 2 of 10 from the field in game one. Now, you know, we've seen Josh Hart take advantage of being left alone to shoot. They're going to need Herb to do the same. Like, he doesn't need to turn into an elite 3-point shooter, but he needs to do enough to make them pay, just to help with the spacing offensively. I think Valanciunas, 20 rebounds in game one. If he can continue to rebound, not at that level, but close to it, maybe that makes Oklahoma City kind of overcompensate in other areas to account for him on the glass. Because, you know, like Dan said, like everyone said, they don't have the bulk to deal with that. Like, they have Bismack Biyombo and Mike Muscala on the bench. Those dudes ain't playing. So that's, you know, it's pretty much Chet, Jalen Williams, both Jalen Williams, I should say, and try to figure that out. It's going to have to be all five guys hitting the defensive glass, I think, because if not, he's just going to have another field day. And it's only a matter of time before that becomes a serious issue for Oklahoma City.
Yeah, and I mean, Chet Holmgren, go ahead, Dan.
I was going to say real quick, for fantasy sake, I think we're getting a taste of what could be. The fact that Josh Giddey is just off the floor in this critical moment. Like, Cason Wiles is getting those serious minutes to guard down the stretch. And I mean, he was the one that was on CJ on that game, you know, game potentially tying three. I think that this is a signal that they're probably going to be looking to move Giddey at some point, like not only from a cash and contract situation, caps situation, but also because, like, I think they're realizing now he's not the best fit for what his skill set is in this lineup. So just food for thought for when you're going into drafts next year. Like, I probably would not be prioritizing Giddey, who showed up for fantasy manager at the end of the season, but for much of the year, he was pretty much a disappointment, seeing under 30 minutes a night. And this is only the beginning, in my opinion.
Yeah, he finished with 20 minutes, 2 points, 1 of 6 shooting in game one. So didn't earn his minutes for game two. But as you said, Raphael, a lot of guys on that bench, the two Williams, Jalen Williams also, they have Kendrick Williams, Cason Wallace playing. So those guys probably get some more minutes. But yeah, Josh Giddey had a lot of drama surrounding him early in the season. He did play better down the stretch, but it looks like he may follow that rotation, Dan. So I'm going to keep the eye on that for the prop market as well. But I did want to note, Chet Holmgren, if you can get Jonas Valanciunas out of the paint more often, you guys have a chance to sweep. So come on, hold it down for me. I need some Mexico money, baby. I'm going on vacation soon. Part of my Mexico money also involves the Denver Nuggets winning the series by 2 or more games, but also sweeping the Lakers, something that I played. So is that crazy, Dan? Do you think that Denver Nuggets go into L.A., they go into their trap, and they take over their trap, and they sweep the Lakers, yes or no?
Who made that track?
It is a good song.
I feel like the Lakers can at least get one. They're going to get the gentleman sweep at least, because if Darvin Ham can just figure out how to give AD a touch on every possession, like, he could be the difference maker in this series if they commit to it. I feel like they're trying to do too much, and it falls on LeBron to have another great game. Like, lean on AD more. That being said, it's going to be very difficult to beat the Nuggets. And that was – game two was, like, their shot, right? Like, they – same similar situation as the Sixers, just I think that you could say that the whistle wasn't as impactful. I think it was more of the Lakers blowing it down the stretch. But they're right there. Like, they're right there. Like, they can get a game or two. But are they going to win the series? No. There's no way that they're going to be built to do this for anything more than probably 6 games. I think I have – the Nuggets in 6, if I'm not mistaken, but I wouldn't surprise me if they got 5.
Yeah, I went Nuggets in 5, but starting to feel like there's not a situation where the Lakers are a deep enough team or talented enough team to beat the Denver Nuggets, Raphael. Just simply, they look like they may be the best team in the Western Conference once again. Do you think the Lakers win a game or two? And what do you know about Bankroll Fresh, take over your trap?
Bankroll Fresh, there you go.
Yeah, I can't say I really listen to Bankroll Fresh, but I think the Lakers can get a win or two. As for winning the series, no, I think Denver just got their number. Like, even when everything seemed to line up for the Lakers in game two, they still couldn't get it done. You know, Jamal Murray just kind of took over in the fourth quarter after shooting 3 for 16 through the first three quarters. So you let that happen, you know Jokic is going to get his numbers. You know, Aaron Gordon's a handful. Michael Porter Jr. played solid basketball as well. So it's like, if you can't take advantage of Jamal Murray playing as poorly as he did in the first three quarters, I don't even know what to tell you. And I'm kind of shocked that we're sitting here and we're still having conversations about things like Anthony Davis only getting one shot attempt in the fourth quarter. Like, that boggles the mind how that happens. Is it on him to demand the ball? Is it on the Lakers to draw up stuff for him to get the ball? I don't know what it is, but they better figure it out quick, because they've lost, 10 or 11 straight games to the Nuggets? That's 11 straight now, our producer tells me. So that's pretty wild. And that's probably why I don't think they can win this series, even if they get a game. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, everyone was talking about starting to warm up to the Lakers more as the postseason came around on some other shows I went on. And I'm like, I don't know. This is still the same Lakers team we've been talking about all year. Unless they're playing the Thunder, I would seriously consider taking the Lakers in that series. But Denver is just a different beast in general. So, yeah, I think this series is over in 4, but I could be polite and say over in 5. And what I did, gentlemen, and if this works out, now, I'll say this. I'm a semi-spiritual guy, my girlfriend pointed this out to me today, and she told me I've already won because she's not the female version of Kyrie Irving, but she's kind of getting there. You know what I'm saying? So I put in a bonus bet today at 11-11-11 on 4/24/24. Didn't even know that. $17 bonus bet to win $53,000, and it was four series: the Celtics, the Thunder, the Cavs, and the Nuggets, all to sweep. All the other four series go to seven games. I don't know if that happens, but if it does, I'm bankroll fresh. That's what I'm going by on this show. I just want to throw it out there. So I think the Cleveland Cavaliers get a sweep. They have been far too good so far, defending down low, hitting threes. As we said the last week, Orlando Magic really don't have the three-point shooting to hang out with Cleveland. So Paolo Banchero, Raphael, he's 15 turnovers. He's been basically him and Franz Wagner, been the two best offensive players. But Orlando needs much more than that. Am I right?
Yeah, he was my pick to break out this postseason. But I did note in the column the caveat of turnovers. And sure enough, he has struggled to take care of the basketball. He had 9 turnovers in game 1, 6 more in game 2. Franz Wagner also had 6 turnovers in game 2. I know last week when we talked about Orlando, our main focus was on their need for perimeter shooting. Kind of under the premise that Banchero and Wagner could do enough as creators to where they may not need a traditional point guard. I feel like that goes out of the window now because you've got guys who are trying to make plays that, quite frankly, they may not be capable of right now. And it's leading the Brit to run out opportunities for Cleveland. Jared Allen has been a beast in the middle for the Cavaliers. Donovan Mitchell's done his thing. And I don't even think Cleveland has played as well as they can. Like Darius Garland, he's been a bit banged up. The only thing is if Mo Wagner can get someone kicked out. That's pretty much the only suspense left in this series because even with it shifting to Orlando for games 3 and 4, the playmaking, Jalen Suggs hurting his knee in game 2 even though he came back. This has been all bad for Orlando.
Yeah, there's really no positives heading into the series in game 3 unless you're saying Orlando is the home team, Dan. Yeah. And that is basically what they got going for them. So can they steal a game at home? And if they do, I mean, how is it done?
I mean, I feel like this is the worst shooting team we have left in the playoffs. I mean, they're just not. It's really interesting because, like, I don't think a lot of people picked the Cleveland Cavaliers to, like, run through. Like, the Magic were a very popular pick just because of their defense and how much they've been consistent this season. But I don't know. I feel like everyone was kind of doubting how much the three stars of Darius Garland, Donovan Mitchell, and Evan Mobley didn't play together this season. So the fact that they're now healthy and you have this – team that won 47 games without being healthy. Like, this is a scary team. And I think that this might be, I don't know. I was trying to think about it. I'll get your guys' opinion. Who poses the biggest threat to Boston in the East? Is it if Cleveland gets past Orlando, is it them because they see them the next round? Or would it be like the winner of, say, the Knicks and Bucks or whoever comes out of that side of things? Who's the biggest threat? What's your thoughts, Vaughn?
I still thought it was the Knicks to begin the postseason. I'm going to stick with it, no offense to the Sixers, because I think it's the winner of that series, to be honest with you. I think both teams have the firepower, physicality, defensively. Joel Embiid would be a tough matchup for Boston, but I think the Knicks overall would be the more dangerous team down the stretch. Rafi, I don't know if you have a difference in thoughts, but I will say 100% agree with you, Dan. Orlando is the worst shooting team. That's why they're getting Klay Thompson in the offseason.
We talked about it.
Yeah, I actually think Boston's biggest threat in the East is Boston. Like, I no, you know, they have times. We also saw it in the fourth quarter in game 1 where it feels like they pull the plug a little early offensively. They go a little too much ISO basketball. When they're moving the ball and getting those corner three opportunities, that team is nearly unstoppable. So I think for them, it's just sticking to routine for a full 48 minutes and avoiding those lulls that they can have. New York, Milwaukee, Philadelphia, I think those three teams can all pose a threat to Boston in the conference finals. But ultimately, it's going to be what the Celtics do that determines whether or not they get to the NBA finals, in my opinion.
And I'll say this too. We often, you know, fall into a recency bias in sports. We also fall into thinking teams will have one stretch as part of a season that kind of count them off once they go back to the normalcy of of what they were doing prior to that. And I think the Cavs and the Knicks are probably two teams that everyone kind of talked about at one point in the season as this is the year that they finally make the run or they become this. And then we just kind of died off of that and let that go. Mm-hmm. And now we're back like, oh, Cleveland, New York are as serious as we made them up to be. So I think sometimes we have to do a good job of remembering these things and also staying on an even keel or not letting injuries derive us from the potential of these teams. So I'm excited. I think the Eastern Conference is playing out to be more interesting than it looked 2 weeks ago, for sure. Yeah. So I'm excited to see what happens down the stretch there. You may be excited for this weekend also because the next stop in the IndyCar race is in the IndyCar Series. It's the Barber Motorsports Park in Alabama. The green flag waves at 1:30 p.m. Eastern, only on NBC and Peacock. That is this Sunday, home of the Indianapolis 500.
Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you got to check out NexGard Plus, ofoxaconazole, moxidectin, and pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease, plus it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious beef-flavored, soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, ask about NexGard Plus Chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
We're going to talk about a couple of teams that ended the season already. That is Chicago and Sacramento. Sadly, we were talking Bulls basketball today. I was proud, Rafael, that Coby White finished second and most improved player behind Tyrese Maxey, Dan's guy. What do you make of this team moving forward in the offseason, speaking on Chicago with DeRozan, LaVine, Vucevic, and obviously Coby White, a guy you want to build around?
I think the biggest question for them are the injuries. LaVine with his foot injury. Lonzo Ball, I know he's been off the grid for, about 2 years now in terms of playing in games. So that's another question. Patrick Williams, in addition to his injury, he's a free agent this summer. I don't know, I didn't think Chicago could commit, a full-scale extension to them. Obviously, they didn't do that. I'm interested to see what his market is, but at best, in terms of fantasy, he's like a late-round guy, when he was on his game, and he was far too big of a question mark. So I think DeRozan and Vucevic can be top 50 guys. I just don't know if you're going to pick – that fifth round, it feels like an area where I'd want to try to take a stab for someone who has higher potential than either of those guys. So they're relatively safe in terms of fantasy value. I think DeRozan's a free agent as well, if I'm not mistaken. So that's going to be something else to watch. But I sincerely hope, for the sake of Bulls fans, that front office doesn't try to get the whole gang back together. Because at this point, you can't keep doing the same things and expecting different results. Isn't that the definition of insanity? I don't know. I think there are a lot of questions to answer in Chicago, but I think if Lonzo Ball can't play right away, then Coby White's probably going to be one of your safer options on that team in terms of fantasy value.
I'm going to be honest with you, Rafael. Bulls fans forget that Lonzo Ball's even on the team. When you said his name, I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's at the point that we are at with him in this year. So we don't really look at him long-term as an option with this team, but maybe the Bulls front office does. I mean, they are still paying him. But I think this team in the offseason will look completely different, Dan. We look at, as you mentioned, he mentioned DeRozan. He may walk. We may get nothing for him. We weren't able to move LaVine at the trade deadline. I say we because I'm a Bulls fan. And then Patrick Williams obviously was a interesting draft pick. Defensively, a lot of upside for us. But the three-point shooting was something that wasn't really developing at the pace Chicago wanted. So we left with Kobe White, Ayo Dosunmu, Alex Caruso. Andre Drummond, oh my gosh. Where does this team go, man? What do we do?
For starters, I feel like we need to have – the voters need to have a conversation of what most improved player means because while Tyrese Maxey was outstanding first-time All-Star this year, Kobe White's development from last year to this year was more substantial than Tyrese Maxey's. So I do feel like it's awesome that Kobe won second place, but he should have won first place. That being said, I feel like the Chicago Bulls are in a very tough spot right now because financially they're going to be over the luxury tax if they decide to re-sign DeMar DeRozan on top of having Zach LaVine's 3 years, $138 million left still to deal with. So they're going to have to pick and choose here. And reportedly they already offered DeRozan 2 years, $80 million. He's looking for a three-year deal. Paying him $40 million at 35 seems a lot, considering that he also just led the league in minutes played at 35 years old. So if I'm them, man, I'm pressing the reset button. Like, you got to build around Kobe White. You have something there. Alex Caruso is a beast defensively. Probably can do more offensively if you give him the opportunity to. And Ayo Dosunmu is a guy that improved a lot this year. So you have your point guard, shooting guard, and small forward right there. Deal with the rest of Vucevic's contract. Let him come off the books when it's time. Let Pat Williams walk because he's pretty much been a disappointment since joining them. And then maybe Lonzo Ball comes back and cool. You have a really good backcourt to kind of build around, and then you can invest in your front court as you see fit through free agency, trades, whatever value you get for LaVine. Because clearly, I mean, LaVine, I think they were, 10 and 15 with LaVine in the lineup this year. I don't know that you need to pay him three more years and $138 million to figure out that you're not a playoff contending team. So if you're just looking to another play-in tournament type of scenario, blow it up. Don't re-sign. Let DeMar DeRozan go elsewhere. Let trade Zach LaVine and move on.
Yeah, it's interesting that the other team we're going to talk about here as far as what to do in the offseason, fantasy value next season, I feel like is a very reliable trade option for Zach LaVine. I could see him playing for the Sacramento Kings, Dan. I would love to get some younger players in here for Chicago and try and change the culture or the direction of this team and where we're headed. Because when we brought over Arturas Karsakovas, hopefully I'm saying his name correctly.
Karnishevas.
See, I mean, how do you even know that without YouTube and you're hearing it? Come on now. and as a Bulls fan. But when we got him, I definitely felt like this team was going to make all the trades, free agent moves moving forward to really change the trajectory of this team. We get DeRozan and a few other guys, draft Patrick Williams, but a lot of the pieces have made us a mediocre basketball team. And I'm still upset that the Bulls won 39 games, but I had them under 38.5 this season for their win total. Very stupid. But I think there's a lot of work to be done. But as far as the Sacramento Kings, Raphael, I mean, De'Aaron Fox, DeMontis Sabonis, you feel like those two guys you probably want to build around looking for in the future. But you got Keegan Murray, you got Malik Monk, a lot of these young guys coming up for Sacramento now. What's your not only fantasy value for the next season, but what do you expect in the offseason for the Kings?
I was a bit surprised to hear Keegan Murray's name come up in some possible trade. Not really rumors, but some people considering the possibility of trading him. And I think that would be an absolutely stupid decision if they were to do that. I don't think the Kings would do that. We've seen how much he grew from year one to year two. I think he can make a similar jump in year three. What they need to figure out are the other wings, like Harrison Barnes. How much more does he have left in the tank? Kevin Huerter missed the end of the season due to injury. Malik Monk will be a free agent, so you have to figure out how much you're willing to spend there. They need to get more athletic on the wing beyond Keegan Murray, because that's why they lost all six games in New Orleans. Like, they did not have answers there. They were also able to limit Sabonis in those matchups too, but Fox, Sabonis, and Murray, I feel pretty good about fantasy-wise. I think you're looking like second round for Sabonis, you know, second, maybe early third for Fox. And then Murray's someone that when we talked about, I talked about fifth rounders for like DeMar and Vucevic, I'd rather take a Keegan Murray in the fifth round than either of those guys, just because of the upside that he may have within that system. Because it, for him, it's just being consistently aggressive. And I think he finished that level in terms of fantasy this year. So even fifth round may not be a reach for Keegan Murray in the drafts next season. So figure out what you can do with Malik Monk, but they need to get better on the wings, need to get more athletic if they're going to have a chance to kind of continue to build under Mike Brown.
Yeah, I love that comparison of where Keegan Murray would probably be in terms of the Chicago guys we just talked about. That's so true. It's someone you'd much rather have on your team as a Bulls fan. I'd much rather have Keegan Murray than anyone on the Bulls roster right now. Let me ask you this. Is there a situation where in a year or two, a guy like De'Aaron Fox could be traded or his value drops because Davion Mitchell, Keon Ellis, Malik Monk, all these guys continue to rise? They still have Kevin Huerter as well. Do you think that there's any guy on Sacramento's value that might be dwindling in the next year or two?
I don't see any of those guys you listed as rising to the level where they trade De'Aaron Fox. I know Keon Ellis gave them some good minutes down the stretch. I don't think he's near that level. You know, Davion Mitchell, the offense is still a work in progress. Kevin Huerter, I think, I don't know, man. Like, hey, good for him. He got paid a couple of years ago, but I don't really know if he's that guy that can take that next step right now. Effective rotation guy, but that's about it, I think.
Yeah, how about you, Dan? What are you looking for in Sacramento and for them in general? Because, as you said, they have a lot of younger pieces on a very exciting team that's up and coming.
I was trying to figure out what their cap situation is, but like I feel like in order to move to the next level, it's going to take that Keegan Murray leap. And I don't know whether that means – I was actually pretty pissed when they re-signed Harrison Barnes. No, he's a great locker room guy and a solid veteran, but I think that did stifle his development a little bit. I think he should be the flat-out, straight-up four for them. And then you just invest in youth after that. I agree with all of Raph's points on them needing to get younger, more athletic. I think Zach LaVine is an interesting target. I just don't know what assets it would take to get someone like that into the fold. Especially given his injury history. I think there's some questions there. It's probably why he wasn't moved at this trade deadline. But, yeah, I'd be curious to see. Raph said on the low that he can't guard either. That is a fact. but, yeah, I think for Sacramento to go to that next level, man, I think it's really just unlocking Keegan Murray and then trying to figure out, you know, what other pieces you can bring in. I do think that they should re-sign Malik Monk. I just don't know how much it's going to cost. If they can do it for an affordable rate, it seems like he likes playing with De'Aaron Fox, his homie from college. And this guy was a six-man of the year candidate. I mean, he still could win the award. I don't know that he will. I think Naz Reid's team is real. But I think that that's a dynamic playmaker off the bench. Davion Mitchell hasn't really worked out thus far, but he is improving at least. He did get some significant minutes in that playing game. So I think they do have pieces. It's just a matter of, you know, you're going to have to make some tough decisions with, you know, Kevin Huerter type contracts, someone that obviously can't play good defense and is too streaky to be reliable as a starting shooting guard. So I think if you address the Harrison Barnes and Huerter situation, it'll probably make it better. They could also use some front court depth behind Domantas Sabonis as well. Trey Lyles is okay. I think Alex Len was playing deep minutes in the play-in tournament. Like that can't be a thing if you're trying to be a legitimate playoff contending team.
Oh, my God. Speaking of being a thing, you just gave me a flashback last night. Drew Eubanks, he's got to get out that rotation for the Suns. Oh, my gosh. The guy was killing me last night as a guy who had the Suns for a trifecta. Just needed him to cover the full game. And I'm like, get this guy off the floor ASAP. But, yeah, I agree with your sentiment there. And I think one thing you said, too, I think the six-man of the year race is going to come down to, like, a few votes, like a handful of votes will determine who wins that between Malik Monk and Naz Reid. And I'll ask you this, both of you, Raphael, I'll start with you though. Would you offer, because the rumor is right now, Malik Monk is probably going to get a 4-year, $78 million deal from the Kings. Do you think that's a good deal for Sacramento?
That's steep if he's not going to start. You know, if they feel like they can move him into the starting lineup and he can be effective. And I know you can pay that kind of money for high level six men for sure, but I don't know. I think, like Dan said, you're kind of wondering how much is it going to cost and is it going to prohibit them from getting better in other areas? Because, you know, in addition to the wings, Alex Len and JaVale McGee are both free agents. I don't think you're going to lose too much sleep if you lose those guys, but you're going to need to get a solid backup to Sabonis in some way, shape, or form. You know, so, man, 4 years, 78. I mean, if he can get it, good for him. But.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, paying an upper price for, you know, a Jamal Crawford type of six man, if he's going to give you that production year in, year out, I could understand it. But Malik Monk, not saying he won't give you that production in the next 2-3 years, but it's certainly more of a gamble, in my opinion. Than
I didn't even think Jamal got that kind of money.
Well, no, I mean, this is inflation out there. Jamal should have played 5 years longer. He would have been way richer. But, yeah, I also also last night, you spoke on JaVale McGee. I can't believe he's still on a roster. But last night I was 30 years old and I found out Isaiah Thomas is still playing basketball in the NBA.
Yeah.
I saw him on the sideline. I'm like, is that Isaiah Thomas? I was like, yeah, man, he plays for the Suns. I'm like, no, he doesn't play for the Suns. He's on the Suns. There's a difference. But, yeah, no, I am shocked by the amount of players in depth here for just left on some of these rosters, to be honest with you guys. But final parting thoughts for the show today. What are you guys looking at for the rest of the week in the NBA? Any hot takes or expectations for the end of the round one?
Shit, you know my hot take, man. Sixers got to get it together at some point. I think they will. Game three, I think we'll see the Sixers at least get it back to 2-1. I don't know about beyond that. I think it's going to be predicated on how healthy this team is and how healthy really Joel Embiid is. But Tyrese Maxey has been outstanding. I would love to see the Suns get back into it because the Minnesota Timberwolves are just that. That's probably the biggest beatdown that I didn't foresee. Like I thought that the Minnesota Timberwolves were good, but like. The Suns got to put up some kind of fight here. And by the way, the worst no trade clause in the league, Bradley Beal. Woo. That's crazy. That's crazy. That's almost crazy as Tobias Harris making $36 million this year for the Sixers.
Wow. No comment. Raphael?
36. Yeah, I don't really know what I can add there, but I'm going to say that the Clippers win game three on Friday. That's going to be my crazy take, I guess you could say. So yeah, it's not even that crazy, but I think the Clippers are going to win game three.
I think that both the Knicks-Sixers series and the Clippers-Mavericks series go the distance, go seven games. I think they both get tied up 2-2 at the end of four. Ooh. And then we see the home teams win there on out the rest of the series. So that means – you know, the Knicks get the dub here. Still sticking with you, Raphael. So, come on, man. You guys better hold me down. Bankroll fresh. I'm trying to get there, baby. But I appreciate you.
You should have put more than 17 on that, man.
It was a bonus bet. So, actually, yeah, great way for promotions real quick. But I don't want to talk too much about sports betting. But there are some fun promotions. Like, you could bet the first three-pointer to be made by a certain player. And then you get a dollar back for every three made. So that's what I did it last night. And I picked Devin Booker, who missed the first three of the game. And then Anthony Edwards banged it. So I had a free $17 bet back. And I was like, nice, I'm going to do something to potentially semi-change my life. So, yeah, $53,000. $50
large, that'll definitely be a nice little help.
And as a thank you, I would definitely be hooking you two up and Adam as well, our producer, because you guys have been riding with me all season long. And this has been a fun show. So let's hopefully see if we can get this going. But from
did
Dan,
any of our, Raphael, real quick, did any of our bets from Christmas cash or no?
Well, your no guys
tickets still open? Are they still alive? Yeah. I know mine's not.
Well, technically, yes, because Raphael, if I'm not mistaken, had the Oklahoma City Thunder and Milwaukee Bucks in the NBA Finals. Don't know if we're getting there. And then you had Sixers and Lakers. Definitely not getting there.
Yuck.
Still alive.
It's still alive, but
still alive for a week.
Till the weekend. But you know, I like Raphael's a little bit better. But we'll see where we get. Maybe we'll get some hot takes next week on a long shot or something like that. But for Dan Titus, Yahoo Sports, check out his work, please. Heading into this weekend, Raphael Johnson at NBC Sports as well, and myself, Von Delzell at NBC. And for Adam backstage, thank you for holding us down as always. Everyone watching, thank you. Enjoy the games. Let's get some sweeps in seven-game series, baby. That's what we all want. See you next week.
It's not the Sixers.
Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you gotta check out NexGard Plus, afoxolaner, moxidectin, and pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease, plus it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious beef-flavored, soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, ask about NexGard Plus chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.